Rusty Quill presents.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Selling a little? Or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Tonight's story is not for the faint of heart. Oh, look. Here comes the trigger spider.
Here comes the trigger spider. You know what that means. Let's sing along together. Here comes the trigger spider, creeping near your ear. Beware its whisper, filling hearts with fear. Dreaded tales, an evil chill, lots of bad stuff. You might get killed. It is the trigger spider. This is your only warning. Oh, and look, there he goes, back into his little hole. Let's all say goodbye to the sugar spider. Bye-bye.
The Ballad of the Child Eater. He walked a little funny, with a bit of a shuffle from a stiff leg. He didn't sleep much. An uncomfortable box, a bit of straw, and half-empty lump for a pillow. He slept underground with a tiny window, couldn't quite comfort to warm heaters or plump comforters, or too much daylight. His long days were filled with various labor chores around the Bridewell House of Reform. Feeding the few animals, tending the herb garden, repairing stuck hinges, and banging on boiler pipes. He disciplined the children and instructed them on the basic chores as they sloughed pails, mopped floors, and cleaned the bog. He despised them, and they feared him, because the dead-eyed children knew him by his terrible moniker. He was an older, bent man with a shuffle. He smoked loosely rolled bent cigarettes to the nub, and his name, during the day, was Coulson. The first one to call him Coulson might have been his mother. He was born on a frigid night in a shanty made of a few planks and a sheet of canvas, and was wrapped in a newspaper. He only heard the name spit at him as he was pushed aside, fighting for the rare stick of pottage, or screamed when he was slapped or beaten. He was born partially lame and had no visual memory of his mother. He was pushed to the gutters almost immediately with his many half-siblings to fend for himself for food. His father was a mushy-faced pie of a man who had stumbled drunk into the docks, taunted by one of his older half-brothers, or any one of the mean storm drain rats that hovered around the dock shanties. He was barely four when he saw his first dead body, when a smaller boy named Ben was set upon by the older ones. In a rare occurrence, Ben's father, an absent merchant sailor, had ported for a night, and he'd given Benny a mermaid he'd whittled by hand. Ben was pushed into a circle. He was attacked from behind in a semi-friendly bear hug, only to have his eyes covered in mud, and the other boys kicked him until he was deaf. Ben screamed and shrieked so loud that a mother came running, and the older boys raided her shanty kitchen for any food while she investigated Ben's cries. But Ben had already expired. A mouthful of mud dripping down his throat, choking out a last scream. Eyes dark to the world. Life ebbing and the two halves of a broken mermaid clutched in his tiny fingers. Coulson returned the next day. Ben's body left stuck deep in the rain, the ground pulling him lower ever so slowly, and a frozen expression on his face, as if trying to crawl up from the underworld. Coulson squatted in his ragged nightshirt and slipped the mermaid pieces out without touching Ben's dead hand, and then washed them in a rain puddle. Coulson's lame shuffle made crime difficult. He couldn't escape with haste and was unable to join the boy gangs that pickpocketed drunks or shimmied through high windows into shops. Coulson had to find what meager, honest work in various capacities he could. Daily work coiling ropes and setting traps at the docks, scraping out cesspools at night. He was gifted a book once, but unable to read and no care for it, he tore the pages to pad his shirt from the cold. He befriended a girl selling fabric scraps and thread from a basket, who lost her fingers in the textile mill. When she spurned the boss's advances, she was kicked out into the street. Eventually, she sold her hair and teeth before dying of consumption. A vicious street gang moved into the dock area to shake down the sailors. They drove out the wharf rats like Coulson, and he was scared into the narrow streets of the city. He tried to find factory work in a few places, but was threatened off by floor bosses and into alleys among the coffers and beggars. He took tea and toast at a spike, but the coffin beds were full, and he was unable to steal a tarpaulin cover for the rain. He slept under a few boards in a stolen coat off a dead man. He had never encountered the street dwellers that hovered near the meat district, with the blood pools and the cast-off bones. He heard their howls in the night, almost like a shrill song, and he followed the sound echoing off the alley walls. And as he got closer, he saw them, the street dogs, the mongrels, skinny and vicious, and fighting over some hunk of flesh. It was not long before he realized it was the sections of a child. The dogs pulled on her limbs in a tug of war in the small clearing near a metal brazier fire. The three men in flat caps and ragged coats not even given the struggle a glance as they warmed their hands over the flames and they chuckled. That shrill howl stayed in Coulson, behind his eyes. It felt like a mean itch in his skull, and it would interrupt him as he tried to talk. Couldn't ask for work or beg. He wandered into the same bread shop many times from the smell, and finally the constables beat him and threw him onto the wagon. He was taken away, and with his yammering about the howl and the poorhouse full, they quickly ushered Coulson to the madhouse out in the wilds. known as Ludlow. Coulson, the young man, was dragged off the cart, stripped off his moldy clothes, and into the cold tile bath, where he was shaved of all hair and scrubbed with stiff horse brushes to rid him of lice and grime, and washed with a high-pressure hose. A man in a head cage that protected him from biting chained Coulson to a wall by his neck, next to a small stash of soiled straw, and thrown a clay bowl of thin gruel. The long, echoey halls of Ludlow carried the mad voices as they whispered in the night. He pulled on his chain and rested against it taut as it scraped his neck. He saw a man down the hallway beating his head against the white, washed stone wall over and over again until the red stain grew. Coulson pressed his own temple against the wall, and its cooling chills spread into the scratch in his brain, and it calmed it. He removed it, found a new cold spot, and pressed it hard again, trying to silence the voices. He and the other men, beating against the wall with foreheads and palms and bowls, echoed into the hallways of the madhouse Ludlow, and found a rhythm to strengthen them, to give power to the powerless and the mad. A song that hummed through the stone and into the bones of every man, an infection passed along. A song that gave life, some semblance of control, allowed him connection to the choir of mad people. The palsy plagues my pulses. When your prigs, your pigs are pulling, your culvers take or matchless make, your chanticleer or sullen. The palsy plagues my pulses. When my prigs, your pigs are pulling, your culvers take or matchless make, your chanticleer or sullen. Coulson inherited the song of the madman. He hummed it to himself, and it gave shape to the itch and allowed him to calm and focus. He sang it behind his eyes as he looked into the faces of the guards and the warden and the other patients of Ludlow. He was given fresh clothes. He was polite. He complied with the rules and directions, and shortly was trusted with the job of courtyard grave digger. He was given a shovel and took to shoveling with haste, a task to occupy his mind, something to earn his meager meals. He worked harder than any of the other diggers. He liked the rhythm of the shovel, the metal piercing the dirt, the ground yielding as he pierced its flesh, casting it off into pile after pile. It let him sing all day under the shade of the giant tree, kept him out of the howls of the hallways. So when a large man named Reginald Fitzgerald escaped his room, raided the drug locker and overdosed in fits on the floor, his largeness was hoisted on a giant oak door, and several men carried it out to the courtyard for Coulson to dig a wide hole and dispose the body. Coulson was more than happy to spend all night to commit his body to the ground. He took to his chores, was able to quiet the shakes, and scrubbed and mopped and kept quiet. For this, he was rewarded, given greater responsibilities, and the beating stopped. They left him alone and even occasionally thanked him. He was given better food, extra sections of bread, sometimes scraps of meat. The guards would give him a little something for shining boots or emptying chamber pots. He was moved to coal shoveler for the massive boiler of the asylum, scraping the piles of coal from the chute and packing the chamber. In order to access the sunken boiler room, he was given a special key that took him down deep the stone stairs and into a dark hallway. And just beyond the range of candlelight, a door where Coulson thought he heard an occasional scratch or a whimper. When he stopped to listen, he was given a good shove and told to never mind and make his way to the boiler room. But one cold morning, as he could see his breath, he knew all of the other staff would be staying under their warm wool blankets. Curiosity got the better of him, and he approached that door. He pressed his ear against it to listen, but did not hear any stirring inside. Coulson crouched down to the floor, unlatched the food slide, and slowly moved the knob on the metal door. Only the faintest of light sneaked through the slide. And ever so silently, three faint ladies' fingers reached out. The ring finger braced against the metal and ever so slightly touched Coulson's hand. The nails were jagged, ripped and bitten, scraped off. But the skin was delicate. And it was quiet. For the first time since he could remember, his mind was quiet, without the song. He'd stopped singing the song in his head. He slipped his teacup through the slide, and another delicate hand took it, and he heard a sip and a sigh of relief.
Oh!
Coulson scrambled as someone shouted at the top of the stairs. He quietly slid the knob back, relatched it, and returned to his coal shoveling, firing up the boiler. He returned to the door on other mornings, factoring the visits into his travel time, sneaking extra food or tea or blanket. He whispered to her through the door. She had a quiet voice, talked very softly as she tried to hide an intense slur. They took her teeth, she revealed. Her name was Vivian, and they had taken her teeth to fix her madness and left her in that hole. And after some conversations, she asked Coulson if he could find her some. Ludlow had a medical room with a chair, head straps, and tray of pliers for dentistry. In the cabinet was a single set of large men's dentures. Coulson broke in late one night, removed them, and slipped them to Vivian. He could hear her open her mouth wide, and with a slobbery chomp and a clicking of the dentures, and then a faint, mad chuckle. One evening at Ludlow was disturbed by a huge shake and ground rumble from the nearby mines. Something shook the ground and collapsed an internal wall. A stir among the staff as a runner came through the asylum gates screaming to the warden. Coulson could not make out what was being said. He made for the basement to tell Vivian. She demanded the key to her door. When he emerged, the halls were empty. Something had spooked the remaining doctors and guards. They let the adults out of their cells and opened the main doors. Everyone had rushed out, save a group of children that were huddled together alone under the tree in the courtyard. Coulson took the guard keys to the basement and unlocked the big metal door. And from the darkness emerged Vivian. She stood upright, skin translucent from the solitary dark, coldness in her eyes. She ascended the stairs slowly, her limbs weak. "Vivian," Coulson whispered. And she hushed him and glared. "You will call me Miss Brianna," she said. But from that point on, Coulson would call her mistress. The sky was clear and dark. She blinked into the light of a makeshift torch and met the children under the great tree. They were shaking and clutching each other for warmth. The animals, a pig and a couple of odd chickens, had been freed from their pens. Brianna calmly embraced a loose chicken, cradling it in her arms. And she cast her eyes down at the children.
"Light my children and light a fire. We will eat under the stars. Do not be afraid."
And Brittle Teeth was born. Brianna organized the children into work groups and assigning them to gather the remaining supplies, repaired damaged sections of Ludlow, and consolidated the quarters for the children. Coulson stoked the coal fires in the boilers and set the laundries to wash all the bedding and clothes. Even though Ludlow had been abandoned, they never learned the danger from the mines or cared to venture out to inspect it. But eventually, from distant noises, they realized that the mines were back up and running and the mine towns must be filling back up again with people. Brianna sent Coulson to barter the laundry services to the locals for a fee. She ordered some children to courier and deliver. She gathered canvas bags and the laundry cart was repaired in an ongoing, relentless loop. The income was steady and the smokestack of Ludlow fired once again. As the mine and the surrounding towns increased their output, the demands on the laundry were too great. Children were falling from exhaustion, and the buildings of Ludlow fell into disrepair. Something had to be done. And Miss Brianna's solution? Well, more children, of course. They scoured the surrounding towns and country for straggler children or orphans, but there were few. Coulson kidnapped a child from the neighboring town. But word quickly spread, and a small group of concerned townsfolk sniffing around put all of that to an end. Brianna figured they had to go where outcast children were abundant. Coulson took the cart into the outskirts of the city of Celine and nabbed the first one he saw off the street, but arose such a fuss. Screaming and kicking with windows and lights in neighboring buildings came on, and he abandoned the effort and returned empty-handed. They needed a constant flow of children to work the laundries. They needed them to be frozen in fear for easy plucking and have a means to capture many of them in a single night. They needed a steady supply given the rate that were collapsing. Coulson went to work on the laundry cart, built it up into a full funeral carriage, like a hearse, with muddy glass windows and painted it with black pitch. He scavenged an old black coat and heavy boots, grabbed him a coal shovel with a spike on it, and one of them canvas bags. And he would stalk the streets late at night and pluck them children from the shadows. But it wasn't quite right. So Brianna brought some kind of dark enchantment. It was too easy for children to run away when they saw Coulson. So she gave him something to frighten them. She found an old top hat and said some dark words over it with some powder and then cast it into a coal fire. She pulled it out with tongs and tossed it on Coulson's head. It was as if Coulson was surrounded with soot and smoke, felt taller, limbs grew long and sinister, teeth sharpened and nails blackened and lengthened, and his growl traveled on the cold gale for miles, piercing bedroom windows and rattling the little drums and tiny ears. Hide under your blankets, dearie. They won't save you. Coal fire is coming. It started as a simple black fog, a cloud of soot and coal. Tendrils snaked up gutters and sneaked into open windows to hover over children's beds. Dirty fingers to grab an ankle or heel dangled over the edge. Anything to get a good grip and drag the unsuspecting off and drown out their cries with a choke of dark ash. The children of Celine were no stranger to the tale. Adults had no hesitation to employ any means of keeping unruly kids in line, and it goes how it always goes. Adults translate superstitions with the times, projecting their fears into the corners of the unknown. The stories evolve as they did. What parents didn't realize was, frightening children for bedtime gave their frights a name, and thus named, brought them around in twilight hours. The tale evolved as the city grew, as kids grew more savvy, as more strangers wandered the streets. The soot cloud took on a name, Coalfinger, a bent man with broken teeth who wheezed through the streets at night dragging a dirty bag to abduct the bad and unwanted children from their beds. Better be good or Coalfinger will get ya. Force you to work under the belching stacks, throw you into the pits where you'll suffocate with soot. The black Volga, Coalfinger's carriage, creaked behind him as he walked the cobblestone. A faint dying glow from its thick, dirty windows, the muffled cries of its inhabitants as they fought to get out. Coalfinger can see the kids in their windows. Forehead kisses and nightgowns. Just a moment, Mom will snuff the light. Just a moment, one of your little voices will whimper if you smell the smoke. If you hear a creak, that could be Coalfinger. If that could be him, he loves stealing their safety, their warmth and comfort, and dragging them out into the cold night. What did these soft larvae know about the hard knock? They shoveled slow, worked slow, cried and yelped. It grew his contempt. He liked scaring them, loved his name. Fascinated to look at their faces contort in fear for the tears to start, and then when they dried up in such terror that the children would never be the same. Any sense of innocence stolen, home was a place they would never know again. Home was now the belly of Ludlow, with a nice nap at the end in the courtyard under the big tree. Brianna used them until they fell over. But Coulson liked seeing them in pain. Least they can do is give him a few tears for his trouble. They would do as they were told, work until they collapsed, hold still while he stole their teeth to place in the dolls of Ludlow, and braided their hair into nice laced wigs. He pulled out their teeth with old iron pliers, got so good at that he was quick, but he liked taking his time. He liked to waggle their skulls around a bit, press his foot on a shoulder or thigh to get more leverage. He'd give them little nicknames and keep track of how many teeth he'd taken with chalk marks on his walls. On a warm evening, among the sound of crickets, a portly stranger with a twisty mustache stumbled up to the gates with a terrible pain and looking for a place to sleep out of the wilds. He'd pushed his way through the main gate and collapsed on the front door stoop. Brianna had Coulson search his pockets, but only found fluff and lint. He dragged him to the stone floor of an abandoned room and threw a bucket of cold water on him to break the fever. To his surprise, the man survived, and over a bowl of oats, he told them his name was Pedigree, and he sold cure-alls and novelties to the gullibles. But he was attacked by bandits on his travels, and they took his cart and every coin. He noticed the dolls they had been creating at Ludlow on Brianna's desk, and made her an offer. He would set up a doll shop in the city. If Brianna bankrolled his operation, he would identify the children that were healthy. They'd make much better workers, and their parts would make for the finest dolls they could sell to the rich little girls and boys. Brianna agreed, used the tailoring to make him a costume of gilded fringe coat, hat, and set him up with a steamer trunk of dolls and a bundle of funds to rent a storefront near Uptown. Mr. Pedigree's Doll Hospital was born. Coulson didn't trust him, but the plan did work. Pedigree would pass the selected children oleanders, a flower Coulson could easily pick up with a sensitive sniffer, and Coulson would steer the Black Volga through the dark streets. Better time spent with healthy children and grab those already broken street urchins. Enough children went missing in Selene, it would be tough to track which ones were being trafficked. Coalfinger made his way into the city, into the Park Row mansions. And among them, he took a girl named Iviana and her doll, Matilda. He usually scrapped the doll for parts, but Matilda he kept. When Iviana's Richie friends tried to escape, he knocked Iviana into a vat of lye. The others fled. Coulson led the repairs of the laundry, and Brianna was unbothered. A few escaped children would never be believed. But during the scuffle, the girls threw lye in Coulson's eyes, and he was blinded. He toughed through it, wrapped his eyes with a rag. He knew Ludlow enough to make his way through his chores, and his other senses became stronger, especially his sniffer. He thought little Iviana was cooked for good, and he dragged her little body out to bury her in the courtyard. Brianna seemed interested in the girl. She hovered over the girl, and with her magic, the young Iviana revived. Brianna wrapped her in balm and bandages, and she slept for many weeks. When she recovered, Brianna kept her in her chamber and walked her around the grounds, spent many hours telling her of the world and her vision of it. Coulson didn't like it. She brought her to Coulson and introduced her not as Iviana, but as the Soot Daughter, Brianna's child. Brianna crafted a porcelain mask which covered her scars, except for two large curved openings that accentuated her brilliant green eyes. She dressed her in an emerald dress and cloak. The Soot Daughter, through Brianna's ash enchantment, could singe with a touch, and objects like straw or paper would alight with her attention. The Soot Daughter never spoke and spent all of her time with Coulson and Brianna. She guided the blind Coulson with silent, light touches against his cuff, and rode with him at night as he drove the Black Volga through the streets of Selene. She served as Coulson's new eyes. Mr. Pedigree and the escape of the girls made Brianna withdraw into her office. She spoke of opportunity in the city, drew up blueprints on sheets of paper. The laundry was far too limited. Brianna wanted revenge. She spoke of a great family fortune she was due and an expansion of the business to an empire. They ventured into the city, a rare trip, the three of them in the daylight and a light rain to review open lots for buildings. A slow tour through Lunula Park revealed demolition trucks of the Overland Dust Company and a rain-soaked lot with a collapsed mansion formerly known as the Sotto Voce. Brianna bought the property on the spot, wreckage and all, the hole beyond a thick hedge, and hired the very same company to use her plans to build a great brick house of reform. Before the Bridewell house even opened, mothers were dropping off children and babies, paying her to take the extra mouths off their hands. It seemed that Celine was bursting with unwanted children, and the baby farm known as the Bridewell house was prosperous from the very first day. Brianna reached her tendrils into the city. Using the front of a charitable organization, she aligned herself with the city's leadership and held a grand opening. Her dead-eyed children went into the city with prosperity projects of cleanup and rebuilding, free labor to show the rehabilitation of the street children set to a life of crime and property. A little discipline is all it took. Old Lady Viola Walker was losing her mind. She stumbled over to Bridewell House one day thinking it was Lavendula. Brianna threw her in the underground cell to starve and weaken her. When she was good and feeble, Brianna dragged her upstairs, force-fed her white soup, and then held a seance in the parlor. It was then Coulson learned the whole story. Brittle Teeth, Ms. Brianna, was really a woman named Vivian Voldat, sister to Viola Voldat. Viola Walker through marriage to Leopold Walker and the Walker fortune. She'd been thrown into the depths of Ludlow as a young girl. The seance revealed that Leopold had trained the peacock Plum to lead anyone to the location of the fortune. Plum and Viola escaped. Brianna and Coulson spent many nights hunting the bird with a black Volga. The children kept their distance from Coulson. The dead eyes minded their manners. Brianna's new techniques were effective. But the brand new ones still needed to be broken. They were kept underground in cells, and Coulson would break them of any sand until they were mush. Late one night after the chores, Coulson crouched over a pot of his soup, boiling on his squat stove. When one new boy got some guff, and Starvin was eyeing his soup, he got a little too close. Coulson grabbed the boy by the back of his head, drowned him, scalded his face, and held him under until he stopped thrashing. Coulson was so mad. He tore off the boy's ear and flung it into the broth to cook. And then he nibbled on it while Coulson sang his song. The other children skittered to their corners, and when he had their audience, he cut up the boy's pieces while he sang, "The palsy plagues my pulses. When my prigs your pigs are pulling, your culvers take or matchless make, your chanticleer or sullen." Song had returned. The taste stayed with him, became a craving. He now has a couple of them new ones going at any time in the big old pot, bubbling away day and night. Let them all get a good look, with arms and bones and eyeballs. Gots to get rid of the hair first, then they slow cook up real nice. They make a real tasty broth. Coalfinger went out at night to hunt for more children for the soup. The girl in pink lives next door, a hall-like girl Temperance. Coulson would break her in pieces and boil her in his big pot, taking his sight. He would fire up a new broth just for her, something delicate she could simmer in, and he would take his time sucking the delicate flesh from her fingers. He might even fashion a doll for her and share her with the Soot Daughter. Brianna told him he could not make a move on Park Row until she said so. She had designs on the Duncan Unions, had Pedigree build a candy factory near the river to break them. For now, they keep low, and he spends his nights slipped out into the far reaches of the city to keep the legend alive. The power of Brittle Teeth kept him going. The magic that she put in his top hat. The life of smoke and ash. The unwavering look in her eye. One of these nights, the cold may take the man Coulson, suffering under a bridge with the cough. Where Brittle Teeth will cackle with the crows and the nightmares of every child. Coalfinger would live, and the smell of singed ash will waft with every sick cackle in the dark shadows of little closets forever. Coulson liked the old ways, but Celine is a big city, and things must change. The stable is now a garage, and the sleek lines of black paint curve around the fenders and the iron fangs of the grill of the black Volga. The yellow-green headlights cut through at waist level in dark streets as she growls. He pulled the car from the garage. Bedroom window lights of Park Row slowly dwindled. It was a fresh night. The black Volga's engine softly purred. His snatch sack folded neatly next to him. He curled his bent fingers around the polished steering wheel, a crooked smile spread across his lips. The Soot daughter in her porcelain mask and green cloak settled into the plush seat as he revved the engine. Coalfinger sniffed at the air. It was a crisp night filled with children, and the dark, cruel ember of his heart glowed with elation.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.